I'm Carol Hills, and it's The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. And once again, we head to Mumbai, where we're focusing all this week on women's rights in India. I'm going to hand off now to my colleague Marco Werman and our co-host Ritu Chatterjee, who are there on the ground.
Thank you so much, Carol. I'm with Ritu right here on the edge of the Arabian Sea, on the edge of Mumbai. It's a windy night. And Ritu, this is one of the few places right on this kind of oceanfront drive where you can find public displays of affection between men and women in Mumbai. Am I wrong?
That's right, Marco. The oceanfront is a popular place for young couples.
Yeah, but then again, this is Mumbai. It's a cosmopolitan city, one of the more progressive cities in India. And, you know, for every story about women here in India that I find kind of discouraging, there's one that gives you hope, that really offers some encouragement. And we have both today on the show, and both involve people who are on the ground making change.
That's right. For this next story, we go all the way to the eastern part of the country, right across the border from Bangladesh. It's swampy delta, a mangrove forest, actually the biggest mangrove forest in the world, where climate change is posing new risks for young girls. Here's reporter Sam Eaton.
Drive southeast from Kolkata, and eventually the road comes to an end. This is the Sundarbans, a swampy region with hundreds of islands in the sprawling Ganges River Delta. It's also home to more than 4 million people, and the only way to get there is by boat. I'm heading to a small village called Dokhali, a few miles from India's watery eastern border with Bangladesh. Life here has always been a struggle, but now the constant flooding from rising seas is making things much worse.
They are at the mercy of God, mercy of environment, or you can say climate.
My guide is Save the Children India's Sunil Banra. He's been working in this area because climate change combined with extreme poverty have made it a hotspot for human traffickers. We walk along an earthen dike past homes made of mud and sticks straddling the river.
You see the water level and you see their house, they are almost equivalent. During rainy season, their entire house is flooded with water.
That flooding is not only eroding people's land and livelihoods, it's eroding the social fabric of these communities. Banra says families need money to repair damaged homes and to buy food after the floods, which now happen every year, sometimes caused just by high tides. It's given many families no choice but to send their children away, some as young as 10, 11 years old, to work in factories or in cities.
And over the period of time, this has become they have accepted this practice. It's now like a cultural and social accepted practice in the village.
But the fact that child labor is so common here has paved the way for another, even darker layer of exploitation. Human trafficking rings have set up shop in the Sundarbans, posing as job scouts or using local boys to lure girls away with the false promise of marriage. Once abducted, the girls are sold into prostitution, marriage, and domestic help, sometimes as far away as the Middle East. Most are never heard from again. That's why Save the Children India and its local partners are trying to stop the trade at its most vulnerable point— the children themselves. Around 30 kids, mostly girls, cram into a small open hut next to the river. Every one of them was a dropout until this children's group was formed as a way to catch them up on their studies and eventually re-enroll them in formal schooling. But 15-year-old student Rogina Khatun says that's only part of the program. She says they've also learned to keep an eye out for human traffickers. If an unknown person enters the village, they confront him to find out why he's here. And if he seems out of place, she says they report him to their teacher, who contacts the authorities. Collectively, the children serve as a kind of vigilante group for their peers, checking in with kids' families when they don't show up for school, and looking out for children talking to strangers or leaving their homes wearing new clothes. Something they wouldn't do unless they were leaving town, possibly with a trafficker. The program has been a huge success in the 80-plus villages it's now operating in, dropping trafficking rates to nearly zero. This in a place where in some villages, every family is missing a daughter. Khatun says her dream now is to go to college and to get a job. A dream that wasn't possible before because her parents had pulled her out of school to fish and earn extra income. And they still don't support her going to school. Her teacher, Meetu Mandal, says this is one of the biggest challenges facing the program. Mandal says she can empower the girls through education, but not financially, since there's no vocational training at the school. Not to say she isn't trying. Mandal has been teaching the children how to make bidis, the local cigarettes, in order to sell them for extra money as an added incentive to parents. She says she tries to convince parents that if they give her at least 3 hours a day to teach their children, they can then make bidis for the rest of the day to sell and earn money for the family. It shows just how complicated the solution is for a problem that's equally complex. Save the Children India's Sunil Banra says the children's groups are just the beginning. They're also working on community banks that families pay a small amount into every month in order to provide loans after the floods. And they've set up child protection committees with adults from the village serving as liaisons with the police and government officials on the mainland.
Unless the survival things are not addressed, unless the education for children is not well addressed, unless the basic necessities of daily life is not addressed, they give up, you know, before these traffickers and do whatever they ask them to do.
At this point, a boat pulling up on the riverbank interrupts our interview.
See, Coca-Cola and...
It's a traditional wooden boat weighed down with hundreds of cases of Coca-Cola. Banra laughs at the irony that even here, where there's no clean water, people can still buy a cold Coke. Who can afford it is another matter. The Indian government recently announced it would scale up Save the Children's pilot program beyond the initial 80 villages. But the scope of the problem they're trying to address has become a moving target. Scientists predict much of the Sundarbans will be underwater in as little as 2 decades because of sea level rise. And as one village elder I spoke with put it, it's no longer a matter of improving their situation. They're just fighting to keep it from getting any worse. For The World, I'm Sam Eaton, Dokali, India.